Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
Hello everybody.
Hi Reza, how are you doing?
I'm fine. What about you, Craig?
Yeah, very good.
How are your bathroom renovations coming along?
My bathroom renovations are going very well, thank you. I've got half a bathroom, so I can do my business on the loo.
Can you now spend a penny at home?
I can spend a penny, which is a euphemism for using the toilet. But I don't have a sink, no sink.
Uh-huh.
And no shower, so I'm going to the gym. But hopefully in January, I'll have a fully functioning and usable bathroom. What's news on your side?
Oh, nothing really. Just getting ready for Christmas. I've bought my plane ticket. I'm going to go to Ireland for a couple of weeks, visit my mum. Nothing exciting.
Speaking of news, we have a question this week from Jose in Madrid, Spain. And Jose asks, ¿Cómo puedo preguntar sobre el tiempo in English? And José means the weather, la clima, el tiempo meteorológico.
Not the time.
Not the time. So there's an expression in English that José can use, and it's what's the weather like? What's the weather like? And the piece of language, what's the like, can be very useful to ask about other things. For example, you go away on holiday, you phone your friend, you phone your family, and somebody asks you about the hotel. So the question would be,
what's the hotel like?
Exactly. What's the hotel like? And somebody asks you about the food.
What's the food like?
You go to a party. Somebody asks you about the party.
What's the party like?
You've just bought a new phone. What's your phone like? What's your new phone like? So you can use the same structure for many things. What's it like? And the past, of course, with was. You come back from your holiday. What was the hotel like? What was the flight like? What was your weekend like? What was it like? Very useful. And on the same theme, Reza, I think you have some information on grammar with the verb like.
Yes, well, since Jose asked about what is like, I thought, well, let's look at other uses of like, because it's a very common word in English. You've just talked about what plus the verb to be like, what is it like in the present or in the past. What was your holiday like? It's past. Could be future. I could say, I'm going to Brazil next year. I wonder what it will be like. Could be future. Mm-hmm. But then there are other uses of like. Craig, let me ask you a question to demonstrate.
Go ahead.
You've been to Argentina, haven't you?
I have.
Did you like it?
Yeah, very much. I loved Argentina. One of my favorite countries.
Aha, that's what I thought. He liked it, listeners. He liked it. He loved it. That's just the verb to like, which I'm sure a lot of you already know, to like. Not to be like. I could ask him, well, you've been to Argentina. What's it like, Craig? What's Argentina like?
It's very diverse. It's very different. The people are very nice. They're very friendly. The scenery is very different. There are lakes, there are mountains, there are plains. It's very flat, it's very mountainous. So it's very diverse and very different.
Okay, so Craig has just told me what Argentina is like.
And the food's yeah? Fantastic.
Yeah? You really liked it?
I really liked
those beef steaks? I guess.
Liked the lamb from Patagonia.
Oh, right, yeah.
Patacona.
La Patacona, is it? Patagonia? Patacona? La Patacona.
Patacona lamb.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Oh, I didn't know about that. I knew more about Argentinian beef. A lot of people like Argentinian beef. It's famous, isn't it?
It's also very, very good. But there's a special way they cook lamb on a barbecue in Patagonia. And it's amazing. It is amazing. The best lamb I've ever tasted.
Aha. So you really liked it.
Yeah.
Okay. So listeners, did you notice there that we used two forms, two uses of like. The form of like that Craig started off with when he said, what's the weather like? What is the weather like? So to be like, meaning describe it, give a description. And then I asked him, did he like Argentina? That's just the verb to like. So we've had to be like and we've had to like. If you like something, me gusta, I like it. But to be like is como es.
Mm-hmm.
Not como está, eh? Not como está. Como es.
Como es la comida.
Now, Craig, another thing I'd like to ask you about Argentina. You've been in Buenos Aires, haven't you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They say Buenos Aires is the Paris of the Southern Hemisphere. Does it look like Paris?
Some of the buildings are similar in construction to buildings in Paris. Mm-hmm. They're very stately. The architecture could be, you could say it's similar.
Okay. Yes. So in some ways, Craig says, I don't know, listeners, I've never been there. I'm taking his word for it. Craig says that in some ways, Buenos Aires looks like Paris. It looks like que parece, se parece. Paris and Buenos Aires look similar, se parecen. So there's another use of like added to the verb look. Look like means look similar. This is a very common use of like. However, you can also add like to many other verbs. For example, Craig, does Buenos Aires feel like Paris? It may not look 100% like Paris, but does it feel like Paris?
It can feel like Paris. It feels like Paris in the sense, in the cultural sense sometimes. They love literature in Buenos Aires. Mm-hmm. They love cafes, speaking in cafes. There's a great feeling of culture when you go inside some of the buildings. Mm-hmm. So in some respects, it feels a bit like Paris when you're walking around the boulevards, you're walking along the street, you're having coffee in some of the beautiful cafes. It can feel a bit like Paris in that respect.
And tell me, does Buenos Aires, does it smell like Paris?
Ooh, that's a good question. Does it smell like Paris?
Can you smell le croissant?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It smells like, I don't know what it smells like. It smells like Buenos Aires. It smells like Argentina. It's got an Argentinian special atmosphere and smell. It doesn't smell like anything in Europe.
Okay, so really, to summarize, in some ways, Buenos Aires is like Paris. In other ways, it isn't like Paris.
Correct.
Okay, so there I've said, listeners, it is like Paris. To be like means just similar. It's similar. It is like Paris. The word like there means similar.
I'll tell you something. Nothing in the world smells or tastes like dulce de leche. Dulce de leche smells and tastes fantastic.
Oh, is that a pastry?
No, it's like a caramel toffee that you find in pastries and in some sweets.
Uh-huh.
And it's very popular in Argentina. It's common to go and have a coffee and have a small cake or a small pastry that has dulce de leche in it.
Mm,
you never tasted dulce de leche?
I may have. I think I have in Spain, but it may not have been the real thing. It may have been a copy. I haven't tried an Argentinian style.
I will talk after the podcast. There's a cafe in your area, in your barrio, where you can find Argentinian cakes and pastries, mm-hmm. and I'll tell you where it is.
Uh-huh. Oh, you know what, Craig? I've just remembered. Yes, I have tried it. I have. I once tried a little pastry there. It's in the Calle
it's near
Cuba.
Where you live.
Calle Cuba.
That's right.
It's Calle Cuba. By the way, listeners, honestly, they don't pay us for publicity. I'm just genuinely remembering. Should. I can't remember what it's called. But in the Calle Cuba in Valencia, there is a little Argentinian bakery. And yes, I have had something there, which was like a caramel thing.
So you've tasted dulce
and it was delicious. It must have been dulce de leche,
so
I guess.
What does it taste like?
It tastes like caramel. In other words, listeners, it reminds me of...
But it's better, isn't it?
It's better.
It's richer. It tastes richer than caramel.
Yeah. And also, even if it wasn't better, but it is, because, ladies and gentlemen, they spoke to me with this accent, you know, like, como okay, usted, you know, this Argentinian accent. I thought, it tastes better in Argentinian. Yo, me encanta. Yo,
it's a very sexy accent, the Argentinian accent.
Yeah. Great.
Moving on. Oh, sorry, have you finished?
Yep, certainly have. Let's get back to the Northern Hemisphere for a while.
Moving on to pronunciation. I wanted to talk this episode about two vowel sounds, dos sonidos vocales, that can be confused, and often are, for Spanish speakers. And that is the I sound, as in the verb to hit or sit, I, and a longer sound that's E. For example, in words like heat, or me, or the number three. So, hit and heat are two different sounds. And two words that are often compared, comparados, in course books and textbooks, ship, barco, and sheep. So, ship and sheep. Just forgotten the word for sheep in Spanish.
Oveja.
Thank you. Oveja. Oveja un barco. Ship and sheep. Two more examples. Sit and seat. Sit and seat. Or whip. Látigo. Látigo.
Látigo.
Sí, látigo. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And weep, which is a synonym of to cry. Llorar. So whip and weep. The short sound and the long sound. So you can repeat these words by yourselves. Hit, heat. Ship, sheep. Sit, seat. Whip, weep. And be careful, don't confuse S-H-I-T and S-H-E-E-T, especially if you go to a hotel. What you need to say is, can I have a sheet for my bed? A sheet of paper. Make that sound longer and you will avoid some embarrassing, potentially embarrassing situations. Moving on to phrasal verbs. What's the phrasal verb for this episode, Reza?
Well, the phrasal verb here, according to my sheet of paper with a few notes on it, is take up.
Take up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
For example, Craig, I bet you £10 I can beat you in a game of chess. Are you going to bet? £10 I bet you.
Okay, I used to play chess when I was younger, so I think I might take you up on that.
Aha, he's taken me up. On the challenge or on the offer, to take up an offer or a challenge.
I'll take you up on the bet.
He's accepting. So take up an offer, a challenge, a bet. Un reto, una oferta. To accept. That's to take up. Okay.
Are there any other meanings of take up?
Oh, yeah, there are plenty. Remember I told you that since you're having your bathroom done up and your house is a bit disorganized, you can come round for dinner anytime.
Thank you very much.
When are you going to take me up on that offer?
Well, I might take you up on that offer tomorrow, actually, because the place is a mess, so I appreciate the offer of eating at your place. So I think I'll take you up on it. I'll take you up on your offer. I'll accept your offer.
Okay, now, just to show our listeners that we do listen to the news, we're not obsessed with phrasal verbs and collocations all day long, listeners. We do actually watch the news and take an interest in the world. As you all know, the great Nelson Mandela died recently.
Sadly.
Very sadly. Everyone knows that Nelson Mandela took up the fight against racism in South Africa. He took up the fight. He adopted it, he got involved, to take up a fight, to take up a cause.
Mm-hmm.
That's another meaning of take up.
So that will be in Spanish something like aceptar el reto?
Or involucrarse, mm-hmm. Forgive my pronunciation, involucrarse,
mm-hmm.
Or adoptar, something like that.
Take up the fight.
Take up a fight, take up a cause. Another common meaning I bet lots of listeners already know is to take up a hobby or pastime. For example, a friend of mine wanted to get fit, so she has recently taken up jogging.
Mm-hmm.
Jogging. By the way, jogging in Spanish is footing, but there's no word in English, footing.
No.
El footing is jogging. That's doesn't a common it, false friend.
Doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist. Jogging. She has taken up, she has started a hobby.
Are you thinking of taking up anything in the new year?
I was thinking of taking up aerobics.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I need to get my body in shape.
Are you going to join a club or go to a sports center for that, or do it at home?
Well, that's the thing. I would like to take it up, but I wouldn't like people to see me in, you know, dressed up for aerobics in a group. I think it might frighten them.
On the other hand, aerobics does tend to be full of very attractive young ladies.
Okay, right. Okay. Where do I sign? Where do I sign? Another thing, Craig, is, for example, if I told you Bob took up his new role as a director. Bob took up his new role as a director.
Which is also aceptar, which is to accept a position, accept
a job, a position, yeah. To start, to take up, accept a position, a role, take up. Another is the soldiers took up their positions on the battlefield, or the actors took up their positions in the theatre.
Mm-hmm.
So people like actors, soldiers, people who have a role or a task or a job, and they need to be in a certain place to do that, like on a battlefield, it's important where the soldiers are, they take up positions, or actors take up positions on the stage, el escenario, take up positions there. And one more to end with, and very apt, and I better stop and hand over to you again, Craig. Take up time. I think I've taken up enough time talking about this phrasal verb. Take up time is ocupar tiempo. So, having taken up enough time, back to you, Craig.
I've also thought of another one.
What's that?
To take up clothes. If your trousers are too long, or if you're a lady and you have a dress or a skirt and it's a bit too long, you can take it up.
You're right.
Take
of
up
course.
Take up your trousers. You need to take up those trousers. They're dragging on the floor.
That's a very important use, you're right. Take up clothes. So take up clothes, trousers.
Take up trousers.
You're right.
Moving on to Vocabulary Corner. And this week I thought I'd speak about the difference between a couple of words in the family of work and trabajo that could cause problems for Spanish speakers. Let's start with the difference between work and job. Now, work is a verb and can also be a noun, and job is always a noun. So I can say I have two or three jobs, or I can say I have a lot of work. So, of course, work is a verb, and when it's a noun, it's uncountable, except when you're speaking about works of art, because you can say this is a work by Picasso, or this is a work by Constable. But usually, when you speak about trabajo, work is an uncountable noun. Do you have a lot of work at the moment?
I do, yeah, I do.
How many jobs do you have?
I have three jobs. In other words, I work for three different people. So I have three jobs, they're countable. I have a lot of work, mm-hmm. a lot of work, uncountable.
Right. Yeah. And career is a false friend, because in Spanish you'd say carrera, and you study your carrera in university. But in English, your career begins after you leave university. So you can study law, and when you get your first job, you start a career in law. Uh-huh. Have you ever changed your careers, or have you always been a teacher? Your career at the moment is teaching.
Yes.
But have you ever had a different career?
I originally studied music. I was going to be a musician.
Mm-hmm.
So I did change my career. I started off as a musician but changed to teaching.
Right. Yeah. I used to be a farmer years ago.
Really?
Yeah. And then I changed my career to teaching.
Wow.
And then we'll save that for another podcast.
Well, I'd say there's more money in farming than teaching, from what I know about teaching.
Not the way I did it.
Okay.
Not the way I did it. Another point of confusion. There are many words to speak about when you stop working for different reasons. For example, if you work for a company or a boss, and you're a very bad worker, you're a terrible employee, maybe your boss tells you to go, tells you to leave your job. He throws you out of the company. How do you say that in English?
Well, I would say your boss sacks you.
Right. Your boss sacks you. You can also say to get the sack. I got the sack from my job. But there's another expression, very similar to get the sack or to be sacked.
To get fired.
Right, to get fired. You can be fired from your job. Have you ever been fired? Have you ever got the sack from anywhere?
Yes, I have. I have. Not teaching, listeners. Don't worry. Don't worry.
What happened?
When I was in my early 20s, I used to sell Der Tagesspiegel newspaper in East Berlin.
Really?
And I didn't sell enough newspapers and I got the sack.
Did you sell it in the street?
In Metro and U-Bahn and S-Bahn stations. And because I didn't sell enough, I got the sack.
You got the sack?
I got the sack. But I was never going to sell enough. Nobody wanted to buy the newspaper in East Berlin.
How was your German? Did you speak German?
Ein bisschen. In other words, no, not really. A little bit.
Okay. But then if you decide to leave your job, if you take the decision and decide to leave your company or your position, you resign from your job. You resign. So that is where you make the decision to leave. Another expression for to resign is to hand in your notice, because some companies, some jobs require 2 weeks or 1 month notice in advance before you leave your position. So the expression to hand in or presentar your notice or your resignation means to tell in advance that you are going to leave. And of course, unfortunately these days, because of the financial crisis, many companies are reducing the amount of people working for them, for the company. So because of the financial situation, not because you're a bad worker, not because you're a bad employee, but unfortunately the company has to reduce the amount of workers. And you know the expression for that, Reza?
I would say to be made redundant.
That's right, to be made redundant from your job. And the money they pay you when you leave, because it's not your fault, which I think in Spanish is finiquito, is that right?
Yeah.
That's redundancy money. Mm-hmm. So you get redundancy money when you leave your job.
Unfortunately, Craig, all too many people in Spain are being made redundant at the moment.
That's right.
All too many. There are too many.
It's very sad. And of course, when you reach the age of 60, well, it's 68 now, isn't it? For a man, when you reach the age of 68, what happens? If you're lucky.
If you're lucky, you get to retire and get a small pension.
Right. So that's another way to leave your job. When you get to the retirement age, you retire and the state give you a pension. Or if you're lucky, you get a private pension payout.
Some people retire before 68, though, don't they?
The lucky ones used to be 65.
And then they get early retirement.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Moving on to Reza's top tip.
Well, it's just a quick tip for today. It's simply this. When you go to revise words that you've learned, particularly nouns and verbs, one thing is to remember it and what it means. That's great. But can you remember how it collocates? I advise you, listeners, to brainstorm all the vocabulary you know of collocations. For example, imagine you want to remember what the verb drive means. Okay, the most obvious thing which comes to mind is to drive a car. And that's a very common collocation. You can also drive a bus, drive a train, drive a taxi. Yeah. But there are other uses of drive which are very commonly used in English. So try to remember typical collocations like to drive someone mad.
Drive them crazy.
Drive someone crazy, drive someone mad. Like when my mom shouts at me for not tidying up in her house, oh, she drives me mad, she drives me crazy. She drives me up the walls, in fact. Drive up the walls, make someone get really angry or crazy or mad or just fed up, to drive someone crazy, mad, up the walls.
You say up the walls, I say up the wall.
Ah, okay.
Drives me up the wall, you say
up
walls.
The wall, up the walls, yeah. Maybe it's a little regional variation, maybe England and Northern Ireland may be different. Or what about to drive someone round the bend?
Yep, I've heard that before.
To drive someone round the bend, to make you go crazy. She drives me round the bend with her shouting. She makes me go crazy. Another use of drive, another collocation, is to drive a point home. To drive a point home. So if you repeat and repeat and emphasize the same thing, you're driving that point home. To drive a hard bargain is a common collocation. The businessmen argued for a long time about what the price would be because one of them didn't want to pay the full price. He drove a hard bargain. To drive under the influence is another common collocation with the verb drive. To drive under the influence, what does that mean, Craig?
It means to drive after having drunk too much alcohol or smoked too much marijuana or taken too many drugs. So you drive under the influence, you're intoxicated.
Okay, so you see, listeners, just in a minute or so there, we've come up with loads of collocations of the verb drive. Because, as I say, it's not really that useful just to remember the basic meaning of a verb. If you can't remember its practical applications in everyday English, it's not much use. So brainstorm for collocations. Let's take another example, of this time of a noun, the noun stone. You all know what a stone is. A stone is a hard object, like a small rock. Have you heard of a stepping stone, listeners? Craig, can you tell the listeners what a stepping stone is?
A stepping stone, figuratively, could be one step in the direction of a goal you want to achieve. For example, I see this job, this position, as a stepping stone to becoming a manager. For example.
That's right.
So it's one step in a series of steps to reach a goal or an ambition.
Exactly. It could also be physically a stepping stone in a little river. You know those stones that are placed strategically so you can walk across a small river? They're stepping stones as well. You step on them so you don't get wet.
Mm-hmm.
So listeners, rack your brains, really think hard. It shouldn't take you long to come up with a rolling stone, if you know anything about music at all, a rolling stone. The Rolling Stones, they're a music group.
A rolling stone gathers no moss.
Exactly. That's why they're called the Rolling Stones. They gather no moss. That means they're always moving, they're always changing, they're dynamic.
Musgo, isn't it? Moss?
Musgo. Moss is musgo.
Musgo.
So a rolling stone gathers no moss. That means keep active, keep changing,
keep
moving, and you'll always be interesting and exciting and fresh.
Like Madonna.
Like Madonna. Well,
and Mick Jagger.
Well, okay. Well, until the late 70s, yeah. A stone's throw away. A stone's throw. For example, Albaraya is a stone's throw away from the Malvarosa in Valencia.
It's very close.
You could almost throw a stone and you'd get there. To leave no stone unturned. The police are determined to catch the murderer. They will leave no stone unturned. They will look everywhere and carry out every possible investigation to find him. Leave no stone unturned.
Actually, that cafe near you that sells the Argentinian place that sells the dulce de leche,
yeah,
is a stone's throw from your flat.
Indeed it is.
So we should leave no stone unturned and go there and have a coffee.
You're right. Let's go after this podcast.
We should leave no alfajor unturned. We should go there and have a cup of coffee.
So ask yourself, listeners, what else can stones do to rack your brains to get collocations? Stones, if you throw them into water, they sink. To sink like a stone. Yeah, stones sink. A headstone. Any idea where you would find a headstone?
In a cemetery.
In a cemetery. It's
a grave.
that stone which has writing on it, usually where the head of the body would be, above that on the ground. So there you go, listeners. I just give you a couple of examples to look for collocations of noun and verbs when you're trying to remember them, to revise them, to find their practical uses. That's my tip for today.
And a very useful one it was too. Well, thank you, Reza. And thank you to everyone who's listened to this episode. Next episode is our final episode of 2013, and it will be a Christmas episode. So we look forward to seeing you in the next episode. And don't forget, if you like these podcasts, please leave us a comment, or maybe a star, una estrella, in iTunes, or maybe more than, maybe five estrellas, if you really liked it, and then more people can find this podcast. So go to iTunes, and just write a short reseña. That will be a lovely Christmas present for us.
Craig, can I make a special request just before you say goodbye? If there are any listeners who've got a good recipe for dulce de leche or dulce de leche, if you're in Buenos Aires,
dulce
de leche, could you please send us the recipe?
You can send it to us at mansionteachers@yahoo.es. mansionteachers@yahoo.es. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Bye.
The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later. Licensed by Creative Commons under a BYNC license at ccmixter.org. Si quieres mandarnos un comentario sobre este podcast o una pregunta sobre la gramática, la pronunciación o el vocabulario de inglés, mándanos un email a mansionteachers@yahoo.es. Si quieres mandar un email a Reza con una receta de dulce de leche o cualquier otra cosa, su dirección de email es BelfastReza, todo junto, BelfastReza@gmail.com. BelfastReza@gmail.com.